Subject this morning, the title is Overcoming a Critical Spirit. The founder of FedEx, a man by the name of Fred Smith, made this profound statement: "No one ever erected a statue to a critic." It's just not the kind of people that we lift up as our heroes. And Ben Franklin said this, I'm told: "It is easy for any fool to criticize, condemn, and complain, and most fools do." That's what they do. What is a critical spirit? How is it shown? A critical spirit will hurt and destroy others. A critical spirit is a negative attitude of the heart that seeks to condemn, to tear down, to destroy with words. Critical spirit creates a blind spot in a person's life or in his heart or in his mind, making it almost impossible to believe that I may be the problem and not the person I'm looking at. Open your Bibles to Romans chapter 14 for just some opening thoughts on this subject. I am going to try to hurry along, because I feel like I have a lot that I would like to share, and certainly there's a possibility of going over time. I'm going to try really hard not to. So try to stay with me. We're going to move through this as quickly as we can. Romans 14, starting at verse 7, "For none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ both died and rose and revived, that he might be the Lord both of the dead and the living. But why dost thou judge thy brother, or why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, As I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then every one of us shall give account of himself to God. Let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way." Just going to kind of leave those verses there. I think they're pretty self-explanatory. Don't judge. Now, we want to understand as we go through the sermon a little bit more what that means. What does it mean to not judge a brother? Before we go there, let's think about four types of actions, I guess I'll call them, where a critical spirit tends to show itself. First one is in a gossiper. A gossiper. 1 Timothy 5:13, maybe you know who he's writing to, but it's for everyone. "And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not." A gossiper is one who loves to reveal secrets, loves to tell the latest news, loves to be painted as the one who has privileged information, unknown information, information that other people don't have. A gossiper attempts to leave the impression that he or she is the source of knowledge. I have the latest and I have the greatest. The first to know, the first to tell. And I have this vast bank of information about people in the world. And I know their problems and I have a solution. Well, they speak things which they ought not, he says. There's more verses we could look at in Proverbs. Speaks about it a fair bit. Let's keep moving. Number two, another type of person or another type of action that points to a critical spirit, or that someone with a critical spirit will get caught with, is slandering. Slandering, or a slanderer. And I'll just read these verses to you. "He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool." Do you know what a slander is? A slanderer? A slanderer is someone who makes false statements in order to damage a person's reputation. That's what slander is. I want to tear them down. It's not much different than a gossiper, but Typically, a slanderer doesn't care about the truth, doesn't care about correcting the error. Their main goal is to cast a negative light and tear somebody down. A slanderer intends to inflict harm. A third type of person or action is a complainer. A complainer. In James 5, James uses the word grudge, which if you look it up, it actually means murmur. So let's read it like that. Grudge or murmur not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. You know what a complainer is. We don't have to explain that. Somebody just negative. Life isn't good enough. Life isn't right. This person didn't treat me good enough. The breakfast is cold. The clothes didn't make it back to my closet. A complainer. Discontent, ungrateful. Philippians 2:14 says, do all things without murmurings and disputings. A complainer. And number four is judgmentalism. And Jesus tackled this one in the Sermon on the Mount when you get to chapter 7, and he says, judge not that ye be not judged. Let's turn to Matthew. We're going to spend a little more time on this one. And let's see what Jesus says. I want to point out three things that Jesus says about judgmentalism. Matthew chapter 7, the greatest sermon that was ever preached. Jesus took time to talk about a critical spirit. Perhaps, I think that's what he's talking about here. He certainly talked about this concept of not judging. I think that's part of it. Matthew 7, verses 1 to 5. Let's read them. Judge not, that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye mete, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. What is Jesus saying? What does he want us to learn? What are some of the... Well, three things. Let's talk about them a little bit. So we do have this tendency to judge very harshly. I think that's why Jesus addressed it in this greatest sermon. He knew the hearts of people. He knew our tendencies. And he took the time to give us some instruction about it. Critical people lack empathy for others' point of view. They believe they have the right point of view, and they believe that they have the ability to know other people's motives. What did Jesus say? Jesus said, first of all, choose not to be a condemning critic. Don't do it. It's just that way. It's a command. Judge not. It is your choice and my choice to choose whether we're going to be a condemning critic or not. And you better choose not to be one. Judge not that you be not judged. Now, what judgment is Jesus talking about? Jesus is not saying that we shouldn't practice any moral judgment, moral deciphering. We have plenty of scriptures that say, try the spirits, right? Know whether a prophet is false or whether he's true. We need to know people by their fruits, right? That is not what Jesus is talking about. It is right. It is important. John the Baptist was very critical of Herod living with his brother's wife, and rightly so. That wasn't a critical spirit. That was a moral issue that John was standing on truth and speaking the truth, and it cost him dearly, cost him his life. You see, in our world, there are many that would say we can't take a stand for moral truth. There is no absolute truth. Today's culture would say it something like this. Jesus means don't say anything about somebody's lifestyle, accept and embrace every lifestyle and applaud all lifestyles. That's not what Jesus is saying. When he says judge not, he's not talking about moral absolutes and truth. So what is he saying? Well, this word judge, I found interesting, is the Greek word kino or krino, crino, and it means to try, to condemn, or to punish. And we get the English word critic. Our English word critic goes back to that. Don't be critical, or you'll have other people be critical of you, is really how Jesus is starting this. And the sin that Jesus, so this idea of being a critic, don't be a critic. If we kind of take the concept of judging and being critical, I think it is trying people in the courtroom of our mind. It's analyzing people and saying, you know, up or down, right? What they're doing is wrong or right. And we think we are the person who can decide all of that. What the sin that Jesus is prohibiting is being consumed with criticism, where in our minds we're constantly judging or criticizing. Jesus is condemning fault-finding, or maybe we could say excessive fault-finding. He is condemning a heart that magnifies problems, that makes them bigger than they really are. He is condemning a fault finder who seeks and hopes to find faults wherever he goes. He is condemning habitual criticism or habitual condemnation on other people's lives, dwelling on other people's faults, constantly telling others how they should be doing it better. And this comes pretty close home. This comes into families. This comes into husbands and wives. This comes into how we relate with our children and whether they live up to our expectations or not. This comes into church and among church members. There's plenty of positive things we can talk about people. But a critic will just, those couple things in your life, I just can't stand. I can't get past it, right? And I think that a critical spirit is one of the most damaging things that can happen in a church or in a home or in a relationship. What's interesting is that many times this creeps into it creeps into our peers. So businessmen will be critical of other businessmen. Mothers will be critical of other mothers. Teachers critical of teachers. Pastors critical of pastors. And I think we know what some of those driving factors are. It's a real challenge to me personally. The story is told of Charles Darwin. You know who Charles Darwin is, right? The story is told that he went into a restaurant one day, him and his wife, and they weren't sitting there very long until he told the waitress that the spot they were sitting was too cold. And then the salad came, and the salad had too much dressing on it. And then the steak came, and the steak was overcooked. And the service was too slow, and just everything was wrong. And the waitress came out at the end, and she turned to his wife and said, "I'm really sorry that your husband was so displeased with the experience tonight." And she said, "Oh no, he was very pleased that he could find a problem with everything tonight." You know, that's how some people are. That's what they live on. God help us. So Jesus was teaching, choose not to be a condemning critic. Number two, render judgment on others the way you would like judgment rendered on you. Render judgment on others the way you would like judgment rendered on you. He says that specifically in the second verse. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. We have this law of, see if I can say this word correctly, reciprocity, I think it is. Reciprocal, okay? You know what a reciprocal saw is? It goes back and forth. In the Bible, you know how many times it talks about what you give comes back. You reap what you sow, right? You give and you receive. You forgive and you'll be forgiven. You show mercy, you'll obtain mercy. That is the law of God. That is how it works. But there's this tendency within me, within people, to judge myself by my intentions, but to judge other people by their actions. is that equal out and back? No, it's not. And so when someone has been critical of someone's fault and they fall into the same sin, people are much less likely to show mercy. You know, if you've been a critical person, it's not very likely that you'll receive compassion and mercy when you fall into the same thing that you've criticized for. But there's something, so it's on relationships, on horizontal relationships. Jesus says, you get what you give in many ways. But it's much more than that. He's also talking about, I think, he's talking about being judged by our lives. God will judge us by the way that we judge others. And that is really serious to think about. The good news is that if we come to Christ, we find forgiveness. That's the salvation story. In Jesus, our sins can be taken away. We don't have to be judged by our sins if we confess and forsake and continue to live with Jesus as Lord. But the reality is that someday we will stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And if we don't send our sins ahead, then we receive the judgment of God on our lives. Judge not, that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And the third thing I want to point out that Jesus was teaching us is that we need to respond humbly to criticism and be a wise admonisher. So respond humbly to criticism and be a wise admonisher. What he's not saying is that expect to go through life without any criticism. Nobody's allowed to say anything about everyone else. Don't judge. Okay, you just pretend everyone, just let charity cover the multitude of sins. Sometimes it does. But the truth is, he goes on to give this illustration of a speck in the eye and a beam in the eye, an LVL, right? This barn beam or this 2x4. And the picture is of somebody walking around looking in somebody's eye, but they have this big piece of wood sticking out of their own eye, right? And it's actually a little comical. What he doesn't say is, don't look at the specks. Just let the specks in your eye. No, specks in our eye is something that's actually really something we should care about. But he says, take care of your own problem and then help others. And so it takes humility to accept that criticism. There is a place for criticism. Accept the criticism in my life. And then it says, verse 5, you can clearly cast out the mote out of that brother's eye. And so that's a job for us to do. But we have to do it with love and charity, fervent charity and care. Ephesians says, speak the truth in love. And so we need to find ways to give constructive criticism that always offers a solution. Jesus wants us to respond humbly to criticism and be a wise giver or admonisher. Now, the third part of the message, the cause and the cure of the critical spirit. What is it that causes this critical spirit? As I was studying, it seemed like there's a lot of things that could cause it, but I think that there's one main one. It could be just our sinful flesh, our carnal nature. That's part of it. It could be a pessimistic or negative outlook in life. Some people are very insecure, and I think that can contribute to it. Some are just immature. Some people don't have a renewed mind. Sometimes it's the company, bad company or environment. These things influence us. But there's something that I think goes deeper than all of that, and I think it goes side by side with this critical spirit, and that is bitterness. And I want to talk about bitterness a little bit. Now, I listened to a sermon recently about bitterness that really, really was, I guess, an eye-opener for me. And I'm going to share some of that And I'm happy to share that message with you. This is not all new. This is not all my thoughts. I gleaned a lot of this, but I felt it was so helpful. I wanted to share some of it with you. How would you describe bitterness? How would you define bitterness? I'm going to give you a definition that I think really is an eye-opener. Bitterness. The unresolved violation of my justice system. The unresolved violation of my justice system. You see, Jesus talked about judging because we have this within us as being created in the image of God. We have this, I think, inborn desire for justice. We think life should be fair, and when it's not, it's a problem. Because God is just, and we're created in His image, and I think we have we've been given some of that, those strong, controlling emotions for justice. Now, I want to take you to, I called this one the cause and the cure of a critical spirit. I'm going to take you first to the first time that bitterness is mentioned in Scripture, and then I want to take you to a character sketch of somebody who you probably hardly know in the Bible, and see what we can learn about this cause and cure of a critical spirit in relation to bitterness. Turn to Exodus chapter 15. Exodus 15 is a story that happened right shortly after the children of Israel were delivered from slavery, miraculously delivered from their enemies at the Red Sea. They sang a song at the beginning of this chapter, and all of a sudden, they're out of water. And they murmured, and they complained. Verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were, what's the word? Bitter. And what does Marah mean? Bitter, right? So it could be, when they came to Bitter, they could not drink of the waters of Bitter, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Bitter. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord, are you with me? Let's say it together. Showed him a tree. What is a tree a type of? Do you have any idea? What's a tree a type of in the word? The cross, right? And the Lord showed him a tree, which when he cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statue and an ordinance, and there he proved them. Do you know what the cure is for bitterness? Do you know what the cure is for a critical spirit? Do you know where to find sweetness if all you're finding is bitterness? It's at that tree. It's at that cross. It is at the cross. You see, we're talking about this unresolved violation of justice in our lives. If you want to talk about a violation of justice, go to the tree, right? Go to the cross. What happened at the cross? Was it fair that I sinned and Jesus died? Is that fair? Is that right? God showed Moses a tree. I just want us to think about our own lives and this concept of, see, I think bitterness is the root and a critical spirit is the fruit. And I think if we struggle with a critical spirit, it's right to look deeper than that and say, is there unresolved violations 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something that happened in my family, with a child, with a parent, with the church, with a job? These are things that I still look back and say, that wasn't fair. And I continue to live with that attitude. Go to the cross. Go to the cross and look at Jesus, the sinless, innocent Son of God, who loved us so much and he gave his life. Go to the cross and grasp the forgiveness of God. Go to the cross and you can forgive anyone of anything that they did to you. I want to talk about a man in the Bible who was a very bitter man. I'm going to ask if anybody knows who, except for Caleb, who Ahithophel is. Does anybody know who Ahithophel is? Could you take me to, kind of? You know the name, right? Somewhere around David's life, right? Who was he? He was a bitter man, we're going to find. I'm going to take you on a quick tour of his life, and I want you to see. Again, I didn't discover this myself, but it was so profound. I found it transformational. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 15. And let's find each of the verses here that talk about the man named Ahithophel. So we have David being king, and he's about to lose the kingdom to his own son Absalom. Remember the story? Absalom got the people on his side, right? He set up a conspiracy. He was this tall, good-looking, smooth-talking man that people just flocked to, and they said, "We like Absalom." And he stole the kingdom out from under his father. But he was also a bitter man. He had unresolved violations of his justice system as well, in relation to things that never got taken care of with his father, and the rape of his sister Tamar, and the way that his father was. Well, I think home life seemed to be a bit broken, and his father didn't give him the attention that he wanted, and so he goes out and he forms this conspiracy. Let's read verses 10 to 12. But Absalom sent spies, 2 Samuel 15, sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then shall you say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor." Okay, now you know a bit of who he was. "From his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom." Wait a minute. He's forming a conspiracy against his father, right? And he goes and he gets one of his father's counselors. Does that make sense? Not really, unless if you know that he'll be on your side. And Absalom did. For some reason, and maybe we'll discover that, I think Absalom knew that Ahithophel was also a bitter man. Did you ever hear the phrase, birds of a feather flock together? Of course you did. Bitter people find bitter people. So he takes Ahithophel, and Absalom takes Ahithophel, David's counselor, and he says, "You come with me." Now let's fast forward to verse 31 of chapter 15. Yeah, that's right. We are in 15. Down to verse 31. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. So David has fled the city, and someone comes and says, guess who's with Absalom? It's Ahithophel, your counselor. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount where he worshipped God, behold, Hushai, the Archite, came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head, unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. But if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. See what he's saying. David knew that Ahithophel was a wise counselor. And when he was turned against him, this was trouble. He was going to give Absalom the advantage. And David's life was in danger. And here comes Hushai. And David says, the best way you can help me is to go and lie and say to Absalom, I'll be on your side. But then listen and see what Ahithophel's counsel is and give the opposite counsel. Okay? That's what David's asking Hushai to do. Well, did it work? Let's keep reading. Well, let's go to chapter 16, verse 20. Then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you, what shall we do? What we shall do. So he's trying to figure out what to do with his father. And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, go in unto thy father's concubines, which he hath left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Awful, awful story. But look at verse 23. And the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, is as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. That's how much people looked up to him. But do you see what he did? Do you know what happened on the rooftop of David's house many years before? It's where another immoral act started. And Ahithophel said, well, maybe he knew that the prophet Nathan had prophesied that this would happen. But he said, here's what we're going to do. We are going to cast shame upon David. And he did it. Don't forget that. We're going to come back to that. This is showing his bitterness. Let's go forward to chapter 17. We're getting close. 2 Samuel 17. Moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. He said, I'll go take him myself. I'll take some men with him. We'll kill David, and it'll be all over. Absalom can be king. And that pleased Absalom well, verse 4. But then, verse 5, then said Absalom, call now Hushai. Remember Hushai, right? Call Hushai, and let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spake unto him, saying, Ahithophel hath spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. And Hushai said unto Absalom, the counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they're mighty. They're chafed. They are, I'll just tell you the story quickly. They are on edge right now, right? He says, don't do it. It's not wise. And Absalom ended up listening to Hushai. How do you think Ahithophel, the bitter man, took that? Look at verse 14. Absalom said unto all the men of Israel, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord hath appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. And now, verse 23, and when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass and arose and get him home to his house, to his city, and put his household in order, and hanged himself and died, and was buried in the sepulcher of his father. If they're not going to listen to me, I'll just take my life. Suicide. I had a man tell me just this week. He sent me a text, and he said, my wrists are slit and bleeding. I'm going to take my life tonight. It's not worth living. I think that I ended up talking to him. He didn't die that night. But I asked him, what do you want from life? What is it that is driving you to do this? And I couldn't believe how the answer sounded like a violation of my justice system. I'm not treated fair. Nobody likes me. Life isn't fair. I try to be good, and everything turns against me. And that's where bitterness leads. And I'm not a counselor, but I think, and I don't know if I gave you his name. The man's name was Jim. I'll tell you when I think of it. He said the same thing. He said all suicides grow out of this violation of my justice system. And it's the final act against God. I'll just take my own life then. But we're talking about Ahithophel. We're still not quite at the end. Who was this man? There's still a fascinating little fact about him. Turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 23. What made him so bitter to the point that he took his own life? What was the injustice, the violation of his justice system that said, well, then I'll just take my own life? Well, 2 Samuel 23:24. This is the list of David's mighty men. And we have in verse 34. Did I say 24? 34. Eliphelet, the son of Ahasbai, the son of Maacathite, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel, the Gilonite. So Ahithophel's son, Eliam, was one of David's mighty men. But who was he? Let me give you one more, and maybe this will all come together. 2 Samuel chapter 11. And verse 3. Remember? Ahithophel, his son was Eliam, right? 2 Samuel chapter 11 and verse 3. And David sent and inquired after the woman, and one said, is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Bathsheba was the granddaughter of Ahithophel. And I think that we have a grandpa that could never, never get beyond the violation of his justice system. And it was awful. David should never have taken Ahithophel's granddaughter as his wife. He should never have killed Uriah. But somehow, Ahithophel carried that bitterness and that violation all the way to his death. And his son Eliam served David as one of his mighty men. What made the difference? Well, today, we have a choice. If there's bitterness in our hearts, we have a choice. We still are living in a day of grace and mercy. And the cross is still there. Go to the cross. Take the injustices in your life to the cross. Because if you continue to hang on to these violations of your justice system, all the things that people did that were unfair to you, and that's what you focus on, and that's what you live all your life, the fruit is a critical spirit, and the end is death. May God help us to take our disappointments, our bitterness, to the cross to overcome this habit, this sin of a critical spirit that so easily creeps up in our hearts. Let's instead be constructive. Yes, sometimes we do look at the specks in people's eyes, but let's approach it in love and care and concern and kindness as a brotherhood. We can grow together. Take bitterness to the cross. There's sweetness there.